is the Ontario Family Law Podcast, dealing with issues related to marriage, separation, divorce, and even some child welfare issues. It's a companion to the book, The Guide to the Basics of Ontario Family Law, which is available on Amazon or by calling 416-446-5847. My name is John Schumann. I am a family lawyer, mediator, arbitrator, and collaborative lawyer, and I am the head of the Family Law Group at Derby Smith Frank LLP. Today on the podcast, how is property divided after marriage in Ontario? When married couples separate in Ontario, they divide their wealth that they accumulated during the marriage. It's important to note that a common law couple do not automatically share their wealth with each other when they separate. Many people think that when married spouses separate, they share everything they have with their spouse. That is not the case. Married couples share the growth in their net worth during the marriage, with some exceptions. Property division after marriage is governed by Part 1 of the Family Law Act. That section is not mandatory. Couples do not have to divide their property as the Family Law Act sets out. However, if they do not agree otherwise, a court or family arbitrator will find that the terms of the Family Law Act apply. People can change the way that they divide their property either by agreeing on how they are going to do that before they get married, by way of a marriage contract, or by agreeing to different terms from what is set out in the Family Law Act in their separation agreement. Even if you do not want to divide your property in accordance with the Family Law Act, it is important that you understand how that statute divides property so that you will know whether you would have gotten more or less if you just followed the law. Under the Family Law Act, married couples share in the growth in their net worth during the marriage, with some exceptions that I will go to in a few minutes. What that means is that you look at what each spouse's net worth was at the date of separation. You also look at what that same spouse's net worth was on the date of the marriage. When you subtract one from the other, you come up with a number, which in Ontario is called a spouse's net family property. So an easy way to look at that is that the net family property is the wealth that was acquired during the marriage. Married couples in Ontario do not have any right to own each other's property. Being married does not mean that you are entitled to a piece of property or that you have an ownership interest in that piece of property. All being married means is that you will have the right to a payment from your spouse that makes their growth in net worth during the marriage the same as your growth in net worth during the marriage. So if your spouse's net worth grew during the marriage in about $100,000 and your net worth grew by $50,000, you get a payment of $25,000 so that both of your net family properties are $75,000. You do not have a right to the house that your spouse owns, the car that your spouse owns, or any of their other assets. You just have a right to that payment. And that payment is the same as any other type of payment that a court orders. It does not survive bankruptcy. It is not enforced by the Family Responsibility Office. It is just the same as money you would get if you sued somebody over anything else. There are some important exceptions to the general rule that spouses only share in the growth of their net worth during the marriage. These are the matrimonial home, personal injury settlements, and property that is excluded by a marriage contract. There are also a few other exceptions, so it's important to speak to a family lawyer to see how the law applies to you. A matrimonial home can cause serious problems on the breakdown of a marriage. The Family Law Act states that a spouse has to include the whole value of the matrimonial home in his or her net family property. Where that causes problems is where that spouse brought that same matrimonial home into the marriage. If the spouse brought any other piece of real estate into the marriage, they would get a credit for the value of that property on the day that they got married. However, if that piece of real estate is the matrimonial home that spouse lived in on the day of separation, that spouse gets no credit whatsoever for bringing it into the marriage. We'll give you an example to illustrate this. If you brought a rental property into a marriage, meaning a property that you rent out to somebody else, and it was worth $100,000 on the date of marriage, you would get a credit for bringing it into the marriage. So if you separated and that property was worth $200,000, you would only share $100,000 with your spouse because that is the growth in that property during the marriage. However, if you brought that same rental property into the marriage, but during the marriage you and your spouse started to move into it and occupied it as a matrimonial home, you get no credit for bringing it into the marriage. The house is still worth $200,000 on the day that you separate, but you are now sharing that entire $200,000 with your spouse. Well, you have to consider the other assets and liabilities in each of your net family properties and what effect they have on what the total payment should be. Essentially, you are giving your spouse $100,000 in relation to that property which became your matrimonial home. If that same property had still been a rental property on the day that you separated, you would only have to have given your spouse $50,000. Many people view this as being a little unfair to spouses who bring a matrimonial home or another large piece of real estate into the marriage that becomes the matrimonial home. It is fairly common for spouses who bring a home into the marriage to ask their fiancé at the onset of the marriage for a marriage contract that gives them credit for having brought the property into the marriage, so that only the growth in the property or some other amount is shared, or there's some other mechanism to divide the spouse's wealth accumulated during the marriage. These are not uncommon marriage contracts, and if they are done properly, judges view them as being fair and uphold them. Fixing the matrimonial home problem is not the only thing you can do with a marriage contract. In a marriage contract, you can set up any mechanism you like for the division of property on separation. In a marriage contract, you can say that property will be divided exactly as the Family Law Act sets out, or you can say that the Family Law Act doesn't apply. The spouses will not share in the growth of each other's wealth at all during the marriage. Or you could agree to an entirely different mechanism for dividing up your property from during the marriage. In this regard, the limits on what spouses can do is really limitless, and as long as they follow the basic rules for getting a marriage contract, that marriage contract will be enforced by a court. Those rules are not simple and not always straightforward, and so if you want a marriage contract, it is really quite important to speak to a family lawyer to make sure you do it properly, otherwise your marriage contract may not be worth even the paper that it is written on. However, if you do have a good marriage contract, you can completely change the way your property is divided on separation. One thing you can do with the marriage contract is exclude certain assets from the property division process. This means you can say that a specific piece of property will not be included in your net family property, and the growth of that property and its value on the date of marriage or any other date in time does not matter. So, for instance, if you wanted to protect a family cottage, you can have a marriage contract that states no matter what part of the value of the cottage will be shared between the spouses, it will be excluded from your net family property and not shared. Alternatively, you can say in a marriage contract that spouses will get an ownership interest in each other's assets that are acquired during the marriage. While the Family Law Act says that is not the case, you can have a marriage contract that says you and your spouse actually own each other's property. The other main exception to the rule that parties share in their net worths during the marriage is that is that property that was acquired during the marriage as a result of a personal injury settlement. The law on that part is a little bit complicated because not all of the total personal injury settlement is shared between the spouses. It is only the pain and suffering portion. The right to receive future income can be included in a net family property division, as can the right to be reimbursed for assets that otherwise would have existed on the date of separation. If you have received some sort of personal injury settlement during your marriage, it is very important that you speak to a family lawyer about how your settlement will be shared with your spouse. If your accident or injury occurred around the time of separation and you subsequently pursue a claim, it is important that your personal injury lawyer speaks to your family law lawyer to figure out the best way to structure your settlement. Another important time when an asset is not included in a spouse's net family property, and therefore the value is not shared between the spouses on separation, is when that asset was inherited. Anything that you inherit during your marriage is yours, and you don't even have to share in the value, with two exceptions. First, if you inherit a house that becomes a matrimonial home, then it falls into your net family property, as I discussed before. Second, if you share that asset with your spouse, let's say you inherit a lot of money and you put it into a joint bank account, then you lose the right to take that asset, the bank account, out of the net family property calculation, and you share it with your spouse. Another important point is that if you inherit something before you get married, it is not excluded from the net family property calculation. You still share in the growth of that asset during your marriage, the same as you would with any other asset. This brings me to the last point that I want to make today. In Ontario, with the exception of matrimonial homes, parties do not share in what they had before the marriage. They also do not share in what they acquired after the marriage, or even the growth of their assets that they had during the marriage. That doesn't make any sense. Yeah, I'm getting tired. Yeah. Let's see. This brings me to the last point I want to make today. In Ontario, with the exception of the matrimonial home, parties do not share in what they had before the marriage. They also do not share in what they acquired after the marriage, or after the separation, or even the growth in the assets they had during the marriage when that growth occurred after this separation. That's true even if the asset they had during the marriage grows after separation. This means that if a person has a piece of property or an investment that goes up dramatically in value after separation, the other spouse is not automatically entitled to share in that increase in value. There are some other laws that come into play when spouses have these types of assets. First, if spouses own a property jointly, then they are both entitled to sell that property and share in the proceeds of sale of the entire price, not just the price on the date of separation. So when one spouse wants to buy out the other spouse from a joint asset, they usually use the current value of that asset. That can sometimes be unfair if one of the spouses had nothing to do with the asset after separation, and the other spouse paid all of the cost of maintaining that asset after separation. This is often the matrimonial home when one spouse leaves. However, these calculations can get a little bit complicated, as does the law that applies to them. You should speak to a family lawyer in that sort of situation. That, in a nutshell, is how property is divided after marriage in Ontario. It's a relatively simple process, but can get really bogged down in details with specific assets or certain assets. So, as always, it is best to speak to a lawyer about how the law applies to your particular situation. I hope you enjoyed this edition of the Ontario Family Law Podcast. My name is John Schumann. I am a family lawyer in Toronto. You can reach me at www.devrylaw.ca, that's www.devrylaw.ca, or you can call me at 416-446-5847. We will talk again soon.